Welcome to Hallway Conversations, Directions Media's interview series with geospatial insiders and outsiders. This is Adina Schutzberg, executive editor. Did you ever wonder how hardware manufacturers figure out how well their devices locate? It's kind of the can you hear me now, but for location. Well, there's a company that provides all the testing to find out how well those devices locate, and it's called Spirent. I interviewed Nigel Wright, the Vice President of Marketing for Wireless, about how they do that. I am joined today in the virtual hallway by Nigel Wright, who's Spirent's Vice President of Wireless Marketing. Good day, Nigel. I don't know where you are.
I'm in New Jersey, so good afternoon to you.
Okay, so it is afternoon there as well. I have to say that until we got an email from Spirent, we'd never actually heard of the company. Even though you're involved in wireless and positioning and broadband and all kinds of technologies that we keep an eye on, and that's because you don't provide those things, you actually do something else.
That's exactly right. Yeah, we're not a technology provider. We actually test the underlying technology. The company's name is Spirent, and we're actually one of the world's top three or four telecommunications test and measurement vendors. So we don't provide the technology itself, but we make sure that the technology works. That's our role. And really across, as you mentioned, a tremendously broad range of telecommunications, everything from wireless devices, wireless networks, broadband networks, GPS and other enabling location technologies, tremendous amount of stuff. But really the emphasis is on making sure that the technology performs so that the end user experience of the technology is as good as it can be.
Okay, well, that is part of the process of creating a product that I have to say I'm not familiar with, and I suspect many of my listeners aren't either. So maybe you can sort of take us through the process of, say, a small company, and they're building the latest, greatest location-based services application, the next Foursquare. And when would they want to take advantage of the tools that you provide, and how would they do that?
Yeah, so actually our customer base tends to be more the enablers of location-based services. For example, if you're building the next smartphone that's hopefully going to host a Foursquare application, how does it really perform? I know one of the big frustrations with Foursquare, for example, is that you're sitting in a restaurant and your smartphone actually doesn't detect that you're sitting in the restaurant because you can't get enough accuracy. So we test the technologies that enable you to get better accuracy. If you're a Qualcomm, let's say, and you're developing the next generation of chip that's going to go into smartphones, which might include AGPS, might include upcoming satellite location technologies like a GLONASS or a Galileo or a QZSS, how do you ensure that that chip is actually delivering and that it represents a step forward from the previous generation? That's where we come into it. And we come into that at every stage from basic R&D through to the final validation before launch. We also do a lot of business with, for example, network operators like a Verizon or an AT&T that might be bringing these devices to market and actually wants to see how well the location technology works. So we'll actually provide testing capabilities for them, that they'll set their own test criteria, and we'll provide a qualification, if you like, that a Verizon customer, an AT&T customer, is going to have a platform to deliver LBS that'll give them a good user experience. So that's really where we fit into it. The applications themselves are obviously only as good as the platforms on which they're sitting.
Okay, so all that stuff essentially is going to be ideally squared away and confirmed that it works as well as the person putting the chip into the phone wants or needs before it even goes out into the marketplace for developers
yes.
to build apps and such.
Yeah, exactly right. So that is both at the chipset level and at the device level. And if, for example, I'm developing a GPS receiver or even a new navigation solution for the space shuttle, we're involved in testing that as well.
Okay, so that sounds pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
I'm trying to imagine what this is like, because basically you have to set up somehow like in a room, an environment
right.
that has all of those signals being sent from all the different devices, excuse me, all the different, well, I guess they are devices. You've got satellites, you've got cell phone towers, a whole host of yep. other things potentially as well, and you've got this chip, and it needs to speak to all of those.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And we do that in two different ways. The first way is to check the underlying functionality of the chip itself and the receiver on it and so on. So to do that, we literally simulate in a lab all of the signals. So as you well know, one of the big problems with GPS, if you want to start testing devices that use GPS, all the GPS satellites are obviously constantly moving. So let's say you take it out in the parking lot, it doesn't perform well, so you're going, oh, wait a minute, let me recreate the situation I saw a couple of minutes ago, because clearly that was causing a problem for my receiver. The satellites have already started moving or continued moving. So you've got a dynamic environment there, and testing out in the field with GPS is very difficult, because you can never repeat exactly the same scenario that you had when you did your initial test. So we actually emulate in the lab all of the cellular network. We emulate all of the GPS constellation. And then, as you rightly say, we literally cable it all together, connect it into the chipset to see how well it works as a complete solution. Then once you've done all that, you actually want to end up putting it in a device. Once you put it in a device, the other really vulnerable piece is the design and the performance of the antenna, whether the GPS antenna, whatever it may be. And this was definitely a problem for early smartphones, where the GPS antenna was kind of thrown in as an afterthought, and was often located in a place where, in a typical usage scenario, it basically couldn't see the sky. And so the performance of it was extremely inferior. So the other approach we take is, again, as you kind of described earlier, we put it in a room called an anechoic chamber, and we send a known signal. We simulate the satellites, we send them to an antenna in the chamber, and then we actually rotate the device around to see how well it works under a range of different usage scenarios. And that then helps us have a very good impression of how the total device is going to work out in the real world. So that's called, not surprisingly, over-the-air testing. So we've got those two situations, both of which are done in a lab environment, but one needs a special room, as you alluded to, regular lab-based testing and then over-the-air testing.
Okay, and when you said lab-based testing, you said you cable it in. Do you mean you sort of physically
Correct.
Connect a cable to the chip?
You literally physically connect a cable to a port, or however physically it's arranged. Usually a chip goes on a fixture, on a motherboard, or some other type of enclosure that gives you some RF connection to it. So yeah, we literally cable it into there. So you're not worrying about any sort of coupling effects and so on. You're talking directly to the chip, and you're looking directly at the performance of the chip. Yeah.
Okay, now let's go back to your first comment about how you can't duplicate a particular situation out in the real world. Now, I'm imagining
right.
that I might want to do that in the lab, though. I might want to say, okay, right now the GPS satellite, or three of the GPS satellites, are in these particular locations, and I've got a wireless tower over there. Could I create that scenario?
Yeah, you absolutely can. So, I mean, for example, you can say, all right, I want to be in Hong Kong on the 23rd of August, 2006, because I have a piece of a field report that was a particularly problematic scenario. So you literally put that into our software. You tell it which particular type of network, a cellular network, you want to be on, and you can look exactly as the environment looked in Hong Kong on that day in 2006, so you can replicate your problem. So I can honestly say I don't believe our solutions completely replace the need for field testing, because at the end of the day, these things have to perform well out in the real world. But they do dramatically reduce the need for field testing, and they also provide you with a very accurate, repeatable environment. So if you're trying to solve a problem, you can test under exactly the same conditions from one test cycle to the next to ensure that you've actually resolved the problem.
Okay, so that means that somewhere you have access to a database that describes the situation in all these different geographies all over the world across time.
Well, kind of, yeah. I mean, we have all the orbital modeling of the GPS satellite, so we know exactly where those satellites were in the sky at any given position. So our GPS simulators are obviously, at the end of the day, just a very complex piece of math embedded in software, which does all the orbital modeling, all the orbital predictions for the satellites, feeds that information to a signal generator that will generate then the complex signals representing all of the satellites that are in view in a particular location at a particular date and time.
Okay, but once you start moving to the networks, you know, cell coverage, then that data is a little harder to come by, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. So with the cellular networks, certainly from a GPS perspective, those things are, you know, it's less critical. The cellular network has to provide the right assistance if it's a GPS, but we generally know what those schemes are around the country, and we do have a fully programmable network element that generates that assistance data. So depending on what the network looks like, we can simulate all those different scenarios, and then we simulate the GPS signals, and we can include things like multipath, for example, an obscuration due to buildings. So we can do a pretty good representation of almost any environment, interference, of course, as well. So we can do a pretty good representation of pretty much any environment that you would wish. We also provide a capability that you can actually capture data in the field and then replay it over our simulator as well. Again, if you want to capture a particular problem scenario and then replay it, for example, a GPS scenario, then we enable you to do that as well. So there's a lot of different options.
Right. Okay. So you have to know where the GPS satellites are. You have to know where the towers are, and then these days you have to know where the wireless hotspots are.
Yeah, that's another really good point. So I think at the moment, the use of Wi-Fi positioning, we alluded to it earlier on, with applications coming along like Foursquare now, so much of that is done in areas where GPS is weakest, right? It's done in buildings, in urban canyons, very difficult urban environments, where GPS is generally, signal levels are generally at their weakest, and also where the accuracy of just a network-based solution like Cell ID, that might give you your location to, you know, half a kilometer or so. But if you're trying to show Foursquare that you're in a restaurant, that may well not be accurate enough. So increasingly, and really this started to become popular with the release of the iPhone, which made use of some technology from Skyhook. They integrated Wi-Fi and more recently Wi-Fi and GPS so that you get a hybrid solution that uses the best of all worlds. So if Wi-Fi is available, it'll use that. If it can see GPS, it'll use that. And it'll also use for course reference information, it'll use the cell towers. And we've also got solutions for Wi-Fi because, you know, Wi-Fi is another situation. If you try and test it out in the field, Wi-Fi signals were never designed to be used for location. So you can drive around, see a bunch of Wi-Fi signals, put those into a database. But when you drive it again, all the signal levels and so on that you see driving that same route may well be very different because, you know, there's a truck parked there that wasn't parked there before. Something else has changed in terms of propagation characteristics. So again, if you're trying to, and the algorithms in the devices that are trying to use all these different technologies can be quite complex. So if you're trying to see how well your algorithm's performing and you're not able to completely reproduce a situation time after time as you tweak your algorithms, that can be, you know, very problematic. So again, we produced a lab-based environment which adds Wi-Fi hotspot modeling. So you can put all the details of the hotspots, where they're located. You can feed your own database of Wi-Fi hotspots in there if you like. Feed those into the device as well, and test along with GPS and cellular, and test the ability of your algorithms to actually give you a very accurate location solution. And I do think over the next 12 months, we're going to see a big increase in the addition of Wi-Fi location. Most of the big North American operators are embracing it. More and more devices are licensing technology like Skyhook and other players. So we've very recently added a solution for Wi-Fi positioning as well.
Okay, now here's the real crux of it, I think, for most people, which is, how do these companies actually use the testing? Because it seems like the world knows that there are these giant holes where you can't be located, and you would think that using the database that you just described that you guys have, you could almost say these are the places that are going to be big problems for GPS, that are going to be big problems for cellular, that are going to be big problems for wireless, and maybe have them, you know, try to either tackle it with the hardware that they're building or put up more Wi-Fi hotspots. So is that what they
yes.
do?
Yeah, that's definitely the case. I mean, what you're starting to see already in scenarios like shopping malls, for example, is that they're actually adding additional hotspots simply to help in-building navigation. The holy grail for a lot of mobile content providers is obviously location-based advertising, context-specific advertising. So if you can literally locate somebody as being outside a store in a mall and can push an ad specific to that store to that user with a pretty high degree of confidence that that's where they are, the value of that to an advertiser is pretty significant. So we're definitely now starting to see the addition of more hotspots to these public environments specifically to help with location, especially now there's so many iPhones out there and other similar devices that that use Wi-Fi positioning. So using our tools, you can certainly figure out some of the optimal arrangements of Wi-Fi hotspots and so on to give the best performance and the best location fix on a mobile device.
Now, my last question is also one of these ones that I think is very interesting for consumers and also for developers. When a consumer or a developer is choosing a device and they want it to be their principal locating device, how can they actually figure out which one is actually going to better locate than another? Is there a way that's sort of measured or certified, or is it basically you have to test them in your geography and see how it goes?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. So there is certainly in the GSM UMTS community, so that's the sort of T-Mobiles, T-Mobiles and AT&Ts of this world, there is a formal industry certification program driven appropriately, I guess, by the Global Certification Forum. And actually, we as test vendors wrote the certification tests for assisted GPS in smartphones, and that ensures at least a basic level of performance. It doesn't allow you to choose between them, but there is a certification process in place to at least say, hey, the performance isn't going to be awful. What it doesn't do is tell you which ones perform really well. And to be honest, there's no industry benchmark or anything for that. We do partner occasionally with third-party analysts to pull together reports on how well these devices actually perform, but there isn't a whole lot in the public domain because this testing is quite complex and quite time-consuming. So at the end of the day, you do kind of have to try them out in the environments that you typically use them and get a feel for how well they work. So there isn't currently like a performance metric, if you like, that's published for these devices. This is really an issue that individual manufacturers will look at to benchmark against the competitors and that kind of thing. So we're still a ways from that, but hey, you know what, maybe it's an opportunity for us sometime. We tend to provide the testing tools rather than the testing services, but from time to time we've looked at this and said, hey, you know, nobody else seems to do this, maybe we should jump in. So stay tuned, maybe a business opportunity for us going forward.
Excellent. Well, I hope that business opportunity and others make themselves available for Spirent, and I really appreciate speaking with you today.
All right, it's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to a Hellway Conversation with Nigel Wright, Spirent's Vice President of Marketing for Wireless. If you have questions or comments about today's podcast, you can email us at editors@directionsmag.com or leave a comment at Directions Magazine or All Points Blog. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.